Start with tough phrase, pay tests and base. Start there. By the way, my thesis that Ahasuerus was the greatest synod in Haman, I found it this week in Rav Yonos and Eivshitz in Eretz Dvash. Haman states the same thing.
What is exactly
this? He says he was a bigger synod than Haman.
Oh, just that right now.
Whatever, he has some terrorists, whatever, what he wanted, what his issues were. But nevertheless, he says it was a greater synod than Haman, that he spells out. Now, we have the following. Echad ha-koyrei ve-echad ha-shomei amin ha-koyrei yotzi yidei chavoso. You can read the Megillah, you can hear someone else read it for you. The person that reads it has to be a person that's obligated to do the mitzvah. The person that's deaf, or cotton, or shaita. So the Mechaber paskens, you're not yotze if you hear from any of these people, because a cherish, shaita, and a cotton, because they're not mechuyif. Let's take a look at the Chofetz Chaim. Yotzi yidei chavosu v'tzorach sheyichav v'nakari l'hoitzi v'shamei alotzis. As in any mitzvah, the one that's moitzi has to have in mind that through his actions the other person should be yotzi. The shamei has to have in mind to be yotzi. Cheresh. So here we're talking about ha'ino ha'medaber v'ino shamei klal. If he's not shamei and not medaber, if that's the type of cheresh we're talking about, then I don't need the Shulchan Aruch to tell me that the reason he can't read is because he's not mechuyev davar. He doesn't know how to read anyhow, so he can't, you know, pronounce the words. It's Elamai, so we're talking about a cheresh that knows how to pronounce the words. And still the Shulchan Aruch is saying that he shouldn't read, because I know I'm a davar man or shamei klal. But avagab d'v'al mokayim l'nam lo v'shmuel oz no yotza. Why shouldn't he be able to be mitzi others? The general principle is that in anything that I have to do, it doesn't have to be audible, at least with the evidence, it doesn't have to be audible enough for me to hear myself, even if it's not audible enough. It's Yotzuk, the Le'elba Simon Samach Be'ezit Simon Kuf Pehei. So why should it be different here? So it says, Hocha Le'inin Megillah, Du Mishum Persum Enisa, Chmiru Bo, Yaiser. Because there's a matter of Persum Enisa here, so here they were Machmer. So when it would come out from this sheet of the Bechab and the Beis Yosef, the Pizam Yishikori HaMegillah La'atzmo, let's say a person is reading for himself. Tzorach Nizor Ma'oid She Yashmiel Ozno, Yilavoch Yafilu B'diyevet Lo Yotzo. And according to that sheet, even B'diyevet, he wouldn't be Yotze if he lay in so inaudibly that he can't hear himself. That's sheet number one. Inami. The second factor is that really the cheresh goratve, perhaps the cheresh is worse. This is the taz. Sheinu yochol hashmiel ozno. He doesn't have the ability to hear. But a regular person, he doesn't have to hear. I'm sure I should with the dafkim of cheresh gomor sheinu shamei klal. It's a person, as we call it, it's stone deaf. Lafukim v'shamei k'shamei dafkim lo b'kol rom. If you speak loudly to him, he's able to hear, then he doesn't have a din cheresh in this regard. He says, "B'chol zeh, this whole pilpul l'ladasa shulchan aruch, if you need the ability to be able to hear, avol das kamach roinan dafilu cheresh domu yotzer shomea mimenu. Even if the person is stone deaf, whoever hears from him is yotzi." Now, who was in this list of kamach roinan? A pretty prestigious list: the Bach, the Prichodush, the Gro, the Shargas Aryeh. Besides a number of Rishonim. That's a pretty prestigious list that holds that way. So even a Cheresh Gomer is the Otzer Shomei Mimenu. In other words, they don't have this requirement that he has to be able to hear. So even though the Taz wanted to say, if anything, a Cheresh is worse than a regular person, Nevertheless, he still can be moitzi everyone. And we can welcome the chatchila kuli alma moedim shelo yamidu lahoitzi rab midei chaloso. This is not the preferred shleach tzibur. Everyone agrees to that. Oh, well, we're going to come to this. So according to their shita, and he certainly yaitze, even if it's inaudible, it doesn't have to be audible. You're not worse than a cheresh. Yeah. Now let's take up the bi'aloch, and then I'll come to a very interesting shay that someone raised to me a week or so ago. Miloshen Shulchan Aruch sheshama ma'amir the mashma deinu bar chiyuv klal avlikros la'atzmon. From the way the Shulchan Aruch says, it's a person, he has to hear it from a person that's chayiv to read. So it would seem that this cheresh is not chayiv to read. That's what the Shulchan Aruch is saying. Ochayin b'sforosu b'beisayis shekosu d'vishum persu menisahu mash b'lachor du rak l'nina hoitzi acher shem pitechem, since they are able to yetzichem l'shmoa me'isha shomeya ba'oznov dafka. Because he has, in other words, he has to do their chiyuv, and he wants to say, "But pursue my niece, I'm a chiyuv to hear myself." So, Mamela, the person that's mitzi me, also has to be able to hear. But if he can't hear, so lachar it shouldn't be ma'akiv him. Mishum da'alay yois and acher michaylan nikris la'atzmon or lishtal shiyotin ish achas shiyesh lachosh hashmiya kama yisa. They have another means; they could read themselves, or they could have someone that's hears properly to be made to them. Why should he be exempt? And no mitzvah would he be exempt. Although after Ba'alma Noshim Baturos and Vincentius Van Grom, even though women are normally exempt from a mitzvah, since they too were speared at the time of Haman, they're obligated. So he says, if that's the case, he says, so how about the deaf people? Why should they be any worse? They also got saved. So they should also have to celebrate. Read the Megillah. He says, there's plenty to be said on this. He says, halacha l'maisa, it doesn't make a difference, this whole people. These Rishonim, the Rashba, the Riaz, the Rashbat, Shagam Lachayim, he can be read for all this. And certainly it means that he's obligated. A cheresh, he can't hear from someone else, so he's going to have to read for himself. He can't be yotze by listening, he has to read. If we'll read the words without the trump, he's also yotze. Now, so what comes out, so he really paskins that a cheresh is mechuyev, and really, if a cheresh read for us, we would be yotze. Now, according to the Svar of the Taz, a cheresh is worse than a person that's capable of hearing and didn't hear, because he's not capable of hearing altogether. So it comes out that according to that psak, that even if I wasn't mashmir l'oznov, it's not a problem. That's what comes out from the sheet that Hichah Chovetz Chaim Paskins like. Now, what was the shayla that I was asked? The shayla that I was asked was the following. We have a halacha which is relevant to, particularly to Kriyas HaMegillah. It's relatively relevant to the Kriyas HaTorah too, but in a different way. In a Sefer Torah, we can only be Yitzhak if every single letter is incomplete and intact. If there's one letter that's not, so I can't, not besides the fact that Sefer Torah is possible, but I can't read from it because the letter's not there. And you can't be Yetzi Bal Peh, orally. In the Haftarah, the halacha is the way we paskin, halacha l'maisa. There are mafakpik in what we do, but the way we paskin, as long as most of the text is there, so even though we have some cracked letters, some missing letters, so those can be added orally, and one's Yetzi Haftarah from a klaf. Now, similarly, we have, and here, but there it's just the Shliach Tzibur. We have the same issue in a more profound way by Kriyas HaMegillah, where each one of us is obligated to hear the entire Megillah, not miss a word. So suppose I'm sitting without a kosher Megillah, and what happened is I missed a word. Spaced out for a word, and I realize, so what do I do next? So the halacha is that I can recite it from a chumash. And as long as I keep myself below the 50% threshold of words, I'm yaitze. So now the shayla which someone asked me is the following. Now we have a halacha which says the following, that a person, if he's not does not have a kosher megillah in front of him, should not read along with the shliach tzibur. Why? Because my neighbor sitting next to me may hear me reading, and he'll listen to what I'm saying, and he'll space out from the shliach tzibur. And what I'm reading, he can't be yaitzi with, because I'm not reading from a kosher megillah. So we have a halacha that a person that doesn't have a kosher megillah in front of him is not supposed to read along with the shliach tzibur. So now I have a chumash and I missed the word. Should I repeat that word audibly or not? Should I say the word audibly or not? Right, according to the shita, one sheet of the Shulchan Aruch, that says that if you're not mashmiel oznov, you're not yaitzi. So the chayra should have to say it in a fashion that it's mashmiel oznov. But if I will be mashmiel oznov, I will say it loud enough that it's audible. Maybe the person sitting next to me will hear what I'm saying, and they'll listen to me, and they won't be yaitzi. Because since you can say it yourself, well, you can hear the chazan. But if I listen to someone that didn't read it from a kosher megillah, I'm not yaitzi with that word.
Yeah, but if you read it from a kosher megillah and you don't have in mind to the yotz of the person next to you, he would be yotzi, and then he'd be disturbing the other person from who you're trying to be yotzi with.
So it looks like that we're not so concerned with that. In other words, probably the pshat is that the reason we weren't concerned is that every person that reads wants, if anyone wants to be yotzi with me, you should be yotzi. That's mistaber the assumption that they're operating with. Otherwise, you'd be right. So that's what I was asked. Should, when you make up a word that you miss, should you say it audibly or not? That was the shayla. So I think, on balance, it comes out one should not say it audibly. Because since we're makbid not to disturb others, and I may cause someone else not to be yotzi the megillah altogether, so mameila, better that I should be samech on all of those achrayim, including the gro, that I'm yotzei without hearing it, rather than take the chance of being machmer like the sheet of the mechaber and causing the next guy not to be yotzei at all for my chumrah. So that's what I believe one should do, is if one catches up on a word not from a kosher megillah, one should do it inaudibly. So that was an interesting shiloh of this year. Someone just asked it to me last week, and I considered it, and it's what seems to me halacha to be the halacha l'maisa. Now, Purim is unusual in all the weekday celebrations that we have. It's the only weekday celebration that has a chiyuv of a suda. We never have a chiyuv of suda on a weekday. Yontif we have, Shabbos we have, but there's no weekday which obligates us in a suda other than Purim. Meaning to say, on Rosh Chodesh there's no obligation to have a Suda. On Hanukkah there's no obligation to have a Suda. Because we don't find Simcha and Mishta v'yontif. Right? We accepted upon ourselves Simcha and Mishta. But we don't find that in Hanukkah. I mean, except in Shitas HaRambam, that the Rambam has a din Simcha and Hanukkah. But besides Shitas HaRambam, we don't have it. Now, what the result of that is the following. That if I should omit Yalav Yovel, for example, on Rosh Chodesh, or omit Al Anisim on Hanukkah, I certainly don't have to go back. Because that's the general rule. The general rule is the following. That if it's a meal that I'm obligated to eat, let's say Suda Shabbos, I'm obligated to eat Suda Shabbos. So if I left out Ritzei, I'm not yotzei. By Shabbos Shudas, where I'm not obligated to wash, I'm to be yotzei with the Eved without washing. If I omitted Ritzei, I am yotzei. Okay, and there's a whole tumult on Yontif. If the women have to go bench again, if they left out, maybe they're not mechuyev midrais and simchas Yontif. That's a whole issue. Rabbi Gevayger. If they have to repeat, if they left that Yalav Yovel on Yontif, maybe they don't have to bench again, according to Rabbi Gevayger. So now we have also the following. Suppose Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh coincide. Right? We have Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. Now, Shabbos was Chodesh, so I'm obligated to have a meal because of Shabbos, but I'm not obligated to have a meal because of Rosh Chodesh. But I am obligated to have a meal today because of Shabbos. So the Shaila is, what's the din? Do I have to bench again if I left out Yalav Yovo or not? So there we paskin that since the obligation to have a meal doesn't stem from Rosh Chodesh, it stems from Shabbos, so all that's necessary is to make sure that I did Ritzei. But if I left now Yalav Yovo, I don't have to go back. So that's all well, clear, and established. But now we confront the one exceptional case. We have a weekday, and there's an obligation to have a Suda on Purim, which the implication of that is that we have to wash to be Yotzi that Suda, and to eat, you know, challah, bread. So now what happens if I left out Ritzei? I mean, I left out Al-Anisim, I mean. If I left out Al-Anisim, what's the dinner? Am I Yotzi the Birchas HaMazon or not? So I can't use the normal dodge that I have for Yalav Yovo on Rosh Chodesh and Al-Anisim on Chanukah, that I'm not obligated to have a Suda in the first place, doesn't help. Here I am obligated to have a Suda. So here we find there's a Machlokes of the Achrayim. There's a Machlokes of the Achrayim. Some say that since there's a Chiyuv to have a Suda, and I omitted Al-Anisim, I have to go back and bench again. So that's easy enough to understand that view. The view which holds that I do not have to go back if I bench again, that's a hard view to understand. Why does that follow? I mean, there is an obligation to have a Suda. So what takes place which should exempt me from repeating the Birchas HaMazon? But the Chofetz Chaim Haskins in this case, the Sofik Brochus Lahokel, that we Sofik, one should not go back. Now, I'm not sure, I don't understand.
If you're not sure if you did it or not.
If you're not sure, no, even if you didn't, sure, you know for sure, yes. Now, I don't know why he considers it a Sofik Brochus. I'm a little confounded by that, because we're dealing with, if I ate a full meal, it's a Deraisa Dikadin. So I'm not sure why it's a Sofik Brochus helps me. But what is the basis of the view? So the Chofetz Chaim passes at the end of the day, if I left that Al-Anisim, I don't have to go back and bench again. But the question is, what is the basis of the view that I don't have to go back? On what basis? I'm obligated to have the Suda. So I think we have to go back to the issue of Shmona Esrei. The halacha in Shmona Esrei is that suppose I forgot Al-Anisim. It's interesting. There's a Tosfos in Masechet Megillah that holds that if I forgot Al-Anisim, I have to go back and I should say Al-Anisim. It's probably true by Al-Anisim if I forgot even the additions of the Goinim. There's a Chreinu L'Chaim. There's a Tosfos that holds that I have to daven again. But we don't paskin that way, nor do we paskin. We hold that if I omitted Al-Anisim on Chanukah, or I'm Purim in the davening, I don't have to daven again. I'm Yotzei Shmona Esrei, even if I omitted Al-Anisim. Now, why is it that I'm exempt? Why don't I have to daven again? So we have two possibilities, and those two possibilities, one is that the davening on Purim and Chanukah, we don't daven because it's Purim and Chanukah. We daven because it's another day. The same way, you know, we have a Suda on Shabbos, even though it's Rosh Chodesh, but the Suda we're having because it's Shabbos. Why do we daven this Sunday morning? Because it's another Sunday morning in the week. It's another Sunday morning. It's like I davened 2 days ago, and I'll daven a week after Purim Yom Tishah. So I'll daven on the day of Purim too. I have to daven. It happens to be it's Purim, yeah, it's a nice thing to mention Purim, but we're not davening because it's Purim. We're davening because it's whatever day of the week. This year it's Sunday morning. We daven Shachris, so this is Sunday. We also daven Shachris. Now, if you take that particular stance, what?
How far is between that and Yom
Tov? Between what? Yom Tov, the tefillah is because of Yom Tov. There's a Yom Tov tikkat tefillah. There's no Purim tikkat tefillah. There's no Chanukah tikkat tefillah. It's a whole, the whole idea, the tefillah is an etzem chelik of the chag. Yeah, we daven a weekday Shmona Esrei, there's no, nothing, it's not the Purim and Chanukah, not the Mechayev and tefillah.
Right.
Yontif had Yontif as Musaf. Yes, also the Yontif is a Mechag. Could be. Yes. But
according to that logic, you're down Rosh Chodesh on a Wednesday, it's just a Wednesday. Why do you have to go?
Oh, so let's. Oh, no. Well, I'll tell you why. No, I'll explain this to you in a moment. It's fine. So if we learn that it's because it's not a din, the tefillah is not a din of Chanukah Purim, so Mameila, the Suda, which is a Suda of Purim, so I'd have to go back for. If you learn that they never made the Alanisim, that's significant that you should have to go back for it. That's the reason I don't have to go back. So I don't have to go back by benching either. It's true it's a Sudas Purim, but there's no inherent obligation. Alanisim is a nice thing. Now, the answer is, in a day when there's a Musaf, so the Yom is Bechayiv and Tefillah. On a day when there's no Musaf, then it's another weekday, that's all. That's the Lechor distinction between the two, I believe. If there's a day of Musaf, that means the Yom itself has its own Avodah. And you see, what Shmon Esrei Lemais on Yontif, you see, good. Chalamay, we sort of go in the middle. But that's why the Yalav Yovo is significant. That's what makes it into a Yontif de Ketfilah. But we see, on the Sholosh Regolim, we have a different tefillah for Shachros. Chalamay is in the middle, so the Yalav Yovo takes the place of the Yontif de Kepara Davening. But it's a Yontif de Ketfilah. So this is, first of all, so we do really have to be very careful when we bench to recite the Birchas Hamazon. We have to be very careful to recite the Birchas Hamazon, to recite the Al HaNisim. Because even though we don't have to go back in case we omitted it, but it's a very, very significant Shiloh that maybe we do have to go back. So that's an important point about the Sudas Purim, about the benching of the Sudas Purim. Now, a little about the Shalach Munas. Thank you. A couple of things. Chayev v'shloyach v'chavero shtei monos boso or shel minei oichlin or types of food. Shenemor v'shloyach monos ishtar yoshtei matonos li'ishachot. So I'm asked many times that Do you have to send different types of things? You could send two portions of the same thing. To me, it's Mefurish in the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam, as I spoke Friday night about this. The Shulchan Aruch says, Chayim b'Shulchan Aruch shtei mono isposo. It doesn't say two types. And in the Shulchan Aruch, first in the Rambam, the text that we have in the Rambam, first it says shtei mono isposo, and then he says, O shel shnei minei oichlen. In the text that we have. Some don't have that shel shnei minei. But in our text, it's come out of Furush in the Rambam, that Shtei Mono is Bosa. I don't know, I was rather puzzled. I mean, with this idea, you have to have two separate brochas. You know. It doesn't say in the Gemara, it doesn't say in the Shulchan Aruch, not in the Rambam, such a thing. It doesn't even say in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, you have to have two different types of things. The Aruch HaShulchan raised the question, to which I believe there's a very simple answer. Aruch HaShulchan wanted to know, if I send meat, how do you determine what shtei mono is bosa? Whatever I give, I have a hamburger, I'll cut it in half, I'll say it's two. So what makes one mono and one two monos? He says that's why he's puzzled how this could be. But l'dayti, the answer is very simple. A mono is a portion. That's what it is. So whatever constitutes a portion of the food that you're sending, that's mona achas. So whatever it is, if the minig is to eat 8 ounces of steak, so you send a pound of steak, it's 2 monas. Whatever, if the minig is to eat 4 ounces, so you send 8 ounces, whatever it is. Whatever you're sending, you send 2 portions of it. That's 2 monas,
lechara. How do you define a portion?
Whatever society you live in, since the halacha states that you should send each person according to his station in life, and you shouldn't send an usher something which is below his station in life. So however your society decides what a portion is, that's what you send.
And so if I could send a piece of meat, I wouldn't be yotzei because it's not a really good portion.
It could be. Yerachanami. You know, you'll send a little square of meat, you know, 1 inch by 1 inch, you know. In America, you wouldn't be yotzei. There as you saw, you might be yotzei twice, you know. Mm-hmm. You know. But here, you won't be yotzei.
It doesn't say to send money.
No, not to send money. You can't, you're not yotzei with money.
You're not yotzei.
Unless the only things you might be yotzei roundabout with money. Why do I say that? Because there's a din that if you send something which you can immediately convert into cash, that you might be yotzei with that.
We say matanos la'avionim. Matanos can be a gamut of things.
We'll come to matanos la'avionim. Okay. So some say that if you have that. If you have something that you could immediately convert into cash, he brings the Be'er Hetiv quotes this. Hashaleach mois ksus v'keila. If you send money, clothing, or utensils, b'shvil monois, im yochol amoichro miyad liklis tzeroch tzuda. So he quotes one sheet that it says that you yaitse, because it's immediately convertible. And with every bow, some say you're not yaitzei in that regard. But some want to tell you that you yaitzei because you can change it into food. But the essence is to give food. Now, matonos lev yainim, now it says he cites a chayodim and a ridva that what the shalach monos has to be according to the person that you're sending it to. You know, if you send it to a pauper, so you send him a hamburger and a roll. It's phenomenal. He hasn't eaten in 3 days. Send to a rich man a hamburger and a roll. You're not yaitzei. The Indian is to show a sign of friendship. You know, so it has to be something that the person that receives it considers significant.
They send candies.
What?
Candies. Candies they send. They have all these fancy.
Yeah, whatever. It's a fancy thing. Whatever. That's, you know, maybe that's fine. But, you know, each person, but it has to be something that the recipient considers choshev, significant.
I mean, still, you wouldn't find anything sold in a store is going to be a din of choshev. I think even if I gave an usher a box of raisins, it's a choshev a thing you would purchase in a store.
But it's not a choshev a gift. Listen, I'll put it here this way. If you're doing business with a buyer and he just gave you $25,000 in business and you want to send him a present to thank him, you don't send him a box of raisins. You know, maybe a 21-year-old scotch that cost you $100, you know, that, so remember you. You know, when you call next time, I want to talk to you.
Now we know what the rub wants for scotch. 21-year-old.
Does he have to be Re'ehu?
What?
Does he have to be Re'ehu, or can it be just Tam
Yid? Any Yid, hopefully. Re'ehu and Shas means any Yid. And maybe there's a little bit of Myla to extend the parameters a little bit at the margins. Yeah.
But we have to be very careful. There are poskim who are very much against sending seltzer and water at this time because it's more commonplace, and so that's not considered kosher. We should stay away from that.
Well, it could be. I'm not. There is a question. There's a question. I don't know if you're going to be yaitzer with seltzer and water. Bismaneinu. It happens to be why. There's a Gemara in Avrei Pesachim. The Gemara in Avrei Pesachim says that you can make Kiddush on Chamar Medina. In a place where they don't have wine, they can use Chamar Medina. So apparently, we're not the first society in the world that celebrated water. So the Rishonim, in fact, addressed the issue that, let's say, water is Chamar Medina. That's the Chamar Medina. In other words, when a guy comes, you give him a break out a bottle of water to give him. So it could be Yaitzeh, make Kiddush on a bottle of Perrier. So most Rishonim say you can't. Rashi, I think the Rashi is in Sefer Apardis. Rashi says he could be Yotze. He was a real contemporary man, Rashi. Celebrated water. But so I don't know if it'll work for that reason. Now, when it comes...
I don't
what?
Not because it's not kosher. It's a different spot.
Maybe it's not ever considered kosher water. Halacha.
Even if they charge $6 a bottle.
It's still, maybe it's still not. I don't know. I'm not sure. There, I'm not sure.
There's not one I'm... What's inside of it?
What?
What's the reason why it wouldn't be kosher? Because it's too common?
Yes. It's a common thing, maybe. I don't know. I haven't thought it through. Now, when it comes to matonos levyonim, is there a shear for matonos levyonim or not? So this is a whole complicated subject. So, in one end, when we say a matono, on the sina and shas, a shova pruta, giving a pruta, is certainly, let's say bismanena, a pruta is a nickel or a dime, according to Rabbi Yosef, that's a pruta. So he yates it with that. So some want to say he yates it with that, because that's enough. That chayav l'shloach over a shtei mono. So some learn that that's enough. So whatever you send from Matanos Levyonim, there's no shear. There is no shear. That's the way some learn. Now, others don't learn that way. Let's go back here. Chayev kolodim litin tofresh tzadik dalat. Chayev kolodim litin lepochus shtei matonos l'shnei anim. Because it says matonos l'evyonim. So there's one matona to each of two of yonim. So is there a shear for this? That's the shayla. So here he says, Rashai litin maichel omos. You can give either money or food. And the Prima Godem wrote, v'lo matzosif geis kama yishir matonos. And the Ridvor wrote, afilu shtei prutus, the shavu prutu chashuva matono, avalo v'pochus. That's what he writes. Now, in the Shari Tshuva, brings another view on this. There was a Svardish Chubas called the Zera Emes, and he writes the following. Let me quote the citation for you. Bebirke Yosef. Over Machzik Brochen Kosov Shekhen Kosov the Ayin Shom B'Shem Zera Yaakov. Shem noisin mos, in the name of the Zera Yaakov, Shem noisin mos, tzorach sheyikin shir, sheyikne gimel beim oichlem. Six kezesim of food. We'll see why in a moment. Shem noisin oichlem, tzorach sheyikin lo shir, gimel beim ipas. You have to give him a pas, gimel beim. Kach nero lefum riyat, o lefize mechalek laniyem mono lechol echad pruto. And the whole, you gave out a mona, he gave it a ton of money, but they gave each person a pruta. Is lo yotzi yedei chavosa? What I answer of this yashiv? I'm not sure. So the Shari Tshuva writes, "Vein guba sefer biyodi ladas taimo." He says because in general the bechol duchti in the sin of a pruta. When it says the sin, it's enough to give a pruta. I am sochem getting chav. Okay, varied places where this is discussed. But he says. We find that sometimes by giving tzedakah, they have to give something which is meaningful to the person that receives it. But the visa yeshlam, we do it in kind. In a kriya matana, it's not a matana. Ken yesh bo kedei matana hamo elus. And he gives the definition: the hainu kedei shir suda. It's enough at least to have some measure of suda, small suda. So according to that. It would come out that you have to give enough that the person should have a small suda from it. So, I mean, there's a certain seichel to that, because the chayra, what's the pshat? What's the pshat in the matanos levyonim? It's a din of tztokah. I don't think the matanos levyonim is a din of tztokah per se. Pashtus is the matanos levyonim is that a person should be able to celebrate Purim. The same way that we have most chitim for Pesach. Poshet, lechor, that's the matonos levyonim.
Why is that not considered
tzedakah? It's not just the din of tzedakah. You know, the lechor, the pshat is more than that. The pashtus is, matonos levyonim is to see it the same way that he has the basics to be able to celebrate Purim.
So he's not allowed to use it to buy.
I guess, listen, that's his business what he uses it for. You don't give it with strings attached. But you should give him enough that it could be Yotzei the Din. That's where I believe this Achron is coming from. So that's why I tell people that the Lechatchila is to give Kedei Shir B'Suda Ketana. So whatever that is, I went off to buy a couple of slices of pizza and a soda, a hamburger and a french fries and a soda. At least that much, to have at least a modest Suda. That should be the minimum share, and you should give that double, because it's about tonos levy item. And especially in light of the fact that the halacha says we should place certainly more emphasis in the matonos levy item than we do on the mishloach monos. I said pshat in a taisus, it's not important now which taisus it is. But in certain things in this world, it's hard to gauge what we're supposed to do, what our obligations are. They're not so clearly defined. So I said that the way they will judge us in Shemayim, they'll say, okay. And when it came to the affairs of this world, what did you do? So but the standards that you set for your Olam Hazeh, so don't set lesser standards for your things that bring you to Olam Haba. One guy is, listen, he's a cheap guy, he can't spend a penny on himself. That's the type he is. So good. So then you ask him, listen, so he was cheap under Rabbeinu Shalom Tzchashman, okay, but it was cheap altogether, okay, a halbitzar. But then you have another guy, when it comes to himself, he knows how to spend. And the Rabbeinu Shalom Tzchashman all of a sudden gets cheap, that they don't buy in Shemayim. Long, long ago, I was a teenager. I don't believe I was 20 years old yet. So I was in the matzah bakery with a chavra of mine, and there was a satma guy, one of the early people that lived in Kiryas Yoel. And he was the kneita, he needed the dough. It's a very physically taxing and difficult job. So he said that he just spent at that time, I think about $450 on mezuzahs for his house. He needed 13 mezuzahs, spent about $450 for them. Now at that time, you could buy a mehudadik mezuzah for $13. Quite mehudah for $13. He spent $450. So we were rather surprised, my chaver, and I would ask him, what's the pshat, Isn't that a wealthy man? Okay, a wealthy man is one thing. But someone that's not a wealthy man, how did he spend so much money? So he says, let me explain. He's a young man. He says, it's very simple, he says. When it came to pouring the furnishings and the furniture for the house, he says, I spared no expense. Everything had to be top of the line. He says, now when I'm going to hang the Rabbeinu Shalom's mezuzah on the door, it's going to be second rate. He says, that doesn't go with me. That I can't do. And I've never forgotten it. Baruch Hashem, listen, we live in a time and place where most of us, spend significantly on the Mishloach Manos. So, the Matonos Levyonim shouldn't be at a lesser standard than that. No, that's the way that I see it. I just wanted to go back. I touched really last week in the Shir, but in the Shabbos Shir, I really mentioned it a little bit more. But The whole notion of Purim, the whole Megillas Esther, has to do with Hashgacha Pratis. But subtle things, things that are not obvious. We could read the Megillah as a very simple story, and it's a very nice story. But as we start to look into the depths of the Megillah, everything that takes place in the Megillah is more than meets the eye. Nothing that takes place is exactly as it's stated. Nothing at all. And one simple thing which I touched upon last week in the Shir, and I just, as I thought about it further, I realized there's another aspect that I didn't uncover yet last week. one of the critical, very truly critical things. It's already, it's a detail, but it's one of the truly critical things which takes place in the Megillah. Is not only that Mordechai discovered Bichsav Seresh, but that the king forgot to pay him off at that time. So consequently, when the critical hour came, the king suddenly found himself obligated to Mordechai. And it came out at Haman's expense. Now my shayla that I raised a week ago is, what a phenomenal hashgacha pratis. How did the king lose sight of his obligation? Why? Because he lived in revolutionary times. Right? He had a earlier 240 medinas, he controlled only 127. Revolution was in the air, nationalism, everyone was breaking loose. So the secret police were busy day and night ferreting out plots. Now how do you get people to talk? You reward them for talking. So how did the king make such a lapse on such a critical issue? What was he concerned, the good the king? If I didn't pay off this informer, there are other informers that are not that have information. And he was really desperate because he wanted information before he went to the second suitor. That's what he was really desperate about. You know, what's happening? He didn't know. You know, are they trying to take him out? Who knows where this is going? So how did he, and he was alarmed when he realized it. So what did he do? So he marches Mordechai around the streets of Shushan. High profile with the prime minister. Now, if there are conspirators, where do they have to be? The conspirators have to be in Shushan. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to harm him. So if someone's actually going to do something which is going to harm him directly, the conspirators have to be in Shushan. So now, in Shushan, he gave Mordechai this tremendous reward. So now, he's encouraged anyone that has information to come and share it quickly with the king. If they know there's a plot to take him out today, so they'll come share the information, save his life, and they'll also be, you know, way up there. So how, in such a society, did the king, how did such a lapse take place? What was the Derech HaTava? Good, the Rebbeinu Shalom caused it, but how did it happen? This is the most critical thing he had, was the secret police and the informants, as in any such society, and a time of tremendous revolution taking place. That's why there's the detail of the story. That's why the detail of the story is important. Bichsav Seresh were not revolutionary plotters. This was not a nationalist plot against Achashverosh's life. There were a couple of guys that worked for the bureaucracy that the king overworked. So they decided in their pique that they're going to take the king out. So when the king found them out, and he hangs them, but this did not strike very deep chord by him, because this was not what he worried about. This is crime in the streets, some low-level thugs, you know, running around. You know, every society has them, you just deal with them. That was not what he was concerned about. He was concerned about the revolution, and these guys weren't political types. So Achashverosh was easy for him to overlook it, because this didn't ring, the alarm bells didn't go off with this one. And that's how the fact that that Chazal tell us that they were not revolutionaries. This was just a couple of overworked bureaucrats decided they want a new boss was very significant, because that's the whole reason that Achashverosh forgot about it. And only later, the years later, does he first rediscover what he's forgotten. And it's subtle details. It's the subtle details of Megillas Esther, which ultimately drive the story. Subtle details, ones that are not plainly in sight. The whole thing is Nes Nista. Subtle happenings. We don't so clearly see Yad Hashem and all the hidden agendas which drive the story. That's what we have to be centered to as we go through Megillas Esther. Of all the hidden aspects which ultimately led to our salvation. That's the fundamental approach to Megillas Esther. Good night, Rav Yisai, and Freilich from Yah.
Going back to the point when someone spaces out during laning, so it's quiet shul, can we rely that the ear, even if the mind is not conscious?
I don't know, not necessarily. you know, concentration is such that we can not necessarily hear what's going on around us. So.
And the second question would be Matzis a shekel. Really, real silver is worth more than $1.50.
Yeah, it's a zecher ba'om, but that's all. That's why the minig was always to give a machtis of whatever the coin of the realm was.
But if we redeem it, we take it. If someone has three real coins, and should we be putting more?
I think poshet the lechatchila is you should put more at least $1.50. When you take three coins, you should put back $1.50.
Even though they're silver dollars, you know, worth a fortune.
Yeah, that's not the question of that, you know.
Because I had a run in the city who would say you should give the value of the silver at the current market rates when you redeem it. Not everybody
could do it, obviously. Yeah, there are more says of with the minigas to give three halves of the coin of the realm.
Yeah, but it's a zeichah, so that's why the Kohanim can give it, right? Because Kohanim didn't necessarily give a matzah as a shekel, right?
But it's a zeicher, so everyone.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah.